have no plans, Griffin, for plucking anything at all with your beak from this tree with its sweet taste, lest your guts twist in torment. Thus they cried, from that ring round the tree where they were placed, and the animal twice born said, There inside the seed is kept safe of all righteousness. He turned then to the shaft he'd pulled, and drew the car close to the foot of that leafless, seemingly widowed trunk, and tied it to the tree with just one branch of that same tree. As our plants, when the mighty light that falls on them has joined the second sign of three, the carp, the ram, the bull, for what earth calls the spring, begin to swell in panoply, their colors all renewed, before the sun moves on to the next stars to yoke its steeds. Just so I saw renewal had begun for this bare tree, whose mere description needs the tint of Christ's blood, less deep than the rose, but deeper than the violet. The hymn the company sang then, nobody knows down here, nor did I even have a dim idea of what it meant when I was there. I only knew that hearing what they sang right through was simply more than I could bear. The eyes of Argos, without pity's pang, by being told of Syrinx, went to sleep. The eyes whose long watch over Io cost so much, if by my writing hand I could keep to that same standard, nothing need be lost. As painters paint a model, I could tell how slumber overcame me, but let that be done by one who wants to do it well. I pass to when I woke up, startled at a brightness breaking through the sleepy veil, and heard the call, What are you doing? Rise! As when their master, Jesus, made them scale Tabor, the three apostles filled their eyes with his transfiguration, and a glance at blossoms of the apple trees that make the angels crave its fruit, and drives the dance of heaven's perpetual marriage feast, it takes only a glimpse to leave the viewer stunned. And Peter, John, and James fell to the ground in sleep, but Jesus, from his fund of rousing words, found those to bring them round, and they awoke to find their schools was short of Moses and Elias. And the bright light of Christ's robe was no more what they'd thought had been a transcendental blinding white, so I came to. And there I saw again, standing above, she that before had been my guide, Matilda. She had helped me when I stepped along the river. "Have you seen Beatrice? Where is she?" I said, all in doubt. And she, "Look there beneath that new-grown green." She's seated on the tree's root, hedged about with just the seven virtues. All the rest followed the griffin upward, with a song sweeter and deeper yet. If she addressed me longer, I don't know. I could be wrong, perhaps she did, but now the one was here before me who had turned my cares to calm. And there on the bare ground she sat, so near, left there to keep the chariot from harm, where that two-natured beast put it to stand. The seven nymphs were strung into a ring that formed her cloister. Each held in one hand a candelabrum, never fluttering in north wind or in south, as in our land it would. Here you will be a little while a forester, and citizen always of that high Rome in which Christ has the style of Roman. The world falls on evil days, but for the good in it, look closely now, and what you see write down when you return yonder. Thus Beatrice, and I, whose bow at her command had nothing left to learn of the submissive, gave my eyes and mind as she wished. Never fire came from dense cloud downward so swiftly from where lie confined the vapors in the high air, than the proud eagle of Jove tore down through the fresh leaves and flowers, and not just them. It stripped the bark. It struck the car, which, as a ship that heaves before the storm, reeled to the leeward mark. Then to the windward, cast there by the waves, and then I saw a fox jump at the car. A starved fox, kept alive by robbing graves. My lady mocked its foulness, and as far as fleshless bones allowed, it turned and ran. And then the eagle, from its former place, dived in again and rapidly began to feather the car's insides from the base on upwards with its plumage, and a cry as from a grieving heart I heard descend from heaven, Little boat, You're weighed down by such ill. And I saw something rend the earth between the wheels. A dragon reared upward and drove its tail through the car's floor. And as a wasp takes back the sting it speared into the flesh, I saw the thing withdraw its evil tail and wander off. And what was left was decked again, as fertile soil with dog grass by the plumage, which was not, perhaps, intended solely to despoil, but offered with a pure and gracious heart. And both wheels and the shaft were cloaked with it, in less time than a sigh keeps lips apart, and thus transformed, the frame grew heads to fit its holy structure. Three grew on the shaft, one at each corner, and the three were horned like oxen, and the two fore and two aft had one horn from the forehead each. Be warned, for such a monster never has been seen. But here it was, a mountain fort. Secure, an ungirt harlot, with brows arched to mean sheer boldness, sat there, all set to endure as property, it seemed, to him that loomed behind her. For a giant leaned to kiss her lips, and she reached up, and they assumed their kissing pose again, and then did this again, and then again. But then she turned her wanton eyes on me. And that great beast, that savage lover, when he looked and learned that she had done so, switched from his love feast to beating her from head to foot, and then, still occupied with his colossal rage and deep suspicion, let her go again enough to drag her, in his wild rampage, away until the wood obscured my view of harlot and strange brute. But still I could tell what these symbols were referring to. For there depicted was the foul embrace of France and Holy Church, the latter gone to lewd seed in the reign of Boniface, and then with Clement gone to Avignon. The car that Christ the Griffin had left tied to Empire's tree, beset from every side. Canto 33. The heathen come to their inheritance, O God, the lady sang. Now three, now four, wept and responded, singing in a trance of bitter grief, a sweet psalm to deplore what they had seen. And Beatrice, sighing, heard their melody, and Mary at the cross looked no more sad. But when space for a word from her was left in that long song of loss from the other virgins, she rose on her feet, glowing like fire. A little while you will not see me, sisters, and then we will meet. Echoing Christ in sight of his last hill, she sent those seven forward, and she sent me with one gesture to a rearward place with Statius and Matilda. So she went onward, and had not yet reached her tenth pace, when on my eyes her striking eyes were bent, and with a tranquil air she said, "Step out more quickly, so that if I speak with you, you'll sooner know what I am on about." And when I walked, as I was bound to do, abreast of her, she said, "If you're in doubt, why don't you question me? For I am here." As one who finds his voice locked in his lips before someone that they too much revere, so did I speak, tongue like a foot that trips. "My lady, you must know, you know, my need and what will meet it." And she said, "From fear and shame forthwith I'd have you freed, that you no longer seem to speak in dread of dreams. The carriage that the serpent wrecked was, and is not. But let who has the blame know that God's vengeance, with its sure effect, in time will come, and things won't be the same always for that lone eagle without air, that left its feathers so the car became first beast, then slave, the rage and the despair. I see and say it, that the time is nigh when constellations free from all restraint and contradictions will appear on high to give these numbers, and they are not faint. I see them vividly in my mind's eye. 500, 10 and 5. These figures mean a duke, one sent from God, to slay that thief, that woman, and the giant whose obscene embrace corrupts her in their pact of grief, and my dark tale perhaps persuades you less, because, like that of Themis and the Sphinx, its cryptograms have left you powerless to follow, for the fogged mind never thinks until the facts come in. But so they will, as they did for the Naiads. With no loss of flocks and corn, through that wolf sent to till the fields of Thebes with fear, and plough the dross. Face truth, wrapped in a puzzle. Note it well, and teach the words I say to those who live the life which is a race to death. You'll tell your tale in writing? Make sure that you give unhidden all the details of the tree, which here has been twice robbed. Say what you've seen, and say whoever commits larceny against it, or in any way has been violent towards it, promotes blasphemy of act against God, who for his sole use first made it holy. And for just one taste, the first soul, Adam, paid for his abuse with life almost 1,000 years, laid waste, and then 4,000 more in death, until the crime's avenger died, to expiate that mortal hunger, though it lingers still. Truly, your wits are drowsy and sleep late, if they don't realize that for some due cause the tree is tall, and at the top grows great, reversed, that is. And if, without a pause, the flow through your mind of vain thought and fad had been less like that local source of lime, our little river Elsa, and you had not dipped your poor brains in them every time, like Pyramus and Mulberry, there'd be none of your strange blindness to the mortal right of this tree to require submission, one of Scripture's four main meanings, and indict the eating of its fruit. And this is done by God, to show how gaining righteousness, and here the principle stands in plain sight, in all its ramified expansiveness, begins with the forbidden. But since you are turned, I see, in your poor brain, to stone, and being petrified are darkened too, so that my speech strikes light from every tone to dazzle you, this also you should do. Bear what I say away within your mind, in pictures, if not words, as they that bring the staff back as a sure proof, when they wind the palm around it, that this is a thing that saw the Holy Land. And I, just as the seal transforms the wax, so I am struck by you, and what you said, my brain now has stamped into it. But still I'm out of luck, because your words are far above my head, longed for but out of sight. The more I strive, the more I lose them. Why is this? She said. Just so you'll know, your writing friends who thrive on worldly knowledge can't, by what they preach, follow my words. Your path has been as far from God's as any mortal thought can reach, paths far apart as earth and heaven are. To this I said, I've no remembrance that I from you was even once estranged. My conscience is at ease. A smiling glance from her cloaked this rebuke. You haven't changed. You can't recall because you can't recall you drank today from Lethe, and if smoke means fire, then this forgetfulness is all your fault from that day your attention broke away from me and found some cause to fall elsewhere. But I will make my words as plain from now on as your rude wits may require to take them in without excessive pain. More splendid and slow-stepping, the sun's fire held the meridian, which shifts to match the standpoint of the viewer. It was noon. Just like a forward scout, should something catch his eye, and he adjudge it not too soon to turn and warn. The seven ladies paused at the edge of a deep shade, as might be cast by mountains on cold streams and partly caused by green leaves and black boughs. As they held fast, I seemed to see before them from one source the Tigris and Euphrates spring, and yet, like friends that part, each took a separate course, slowly but surely. How, when they are met right at the start, I asked, are these two streams parted like self from self? Light of the race of humans, glory of us all, this seems too strange for thought. And Beatrice turned her face, saying, Matilda is the one to ask. And that fair lady said, as if she sought to shake off blame, but I fulfilled this task before. Of this I gave him full report, and other things as well, and I am sure that Lethe's water still left what I taught intact. And Beatrice said, Perhaps there's more, a greater care, which often robs the wits of memory, turning recollection dim. But see, you know, where it flows, with its capacity to bring things back. Take him to bathe in that, and do what you do best, revive his weakened faculty. And then Matilda, at her mistress's behest, with no excuses but submission when the moment came to be obedient in will, having received the certain sign of someone else's will and what it meant, with courtesy her hand enfolding mine, said, Come with him, Testatius. And no, I lack the space to write the smallest part, reader, of what I ought to sing. For so sweet was that draught, that never would my heart have drunk its fill. But all the sheets prepared for this, my second canticle, are filled. And from the curb of art I am not spared to take things further. Through the waters spilled by that spring I was remade. Forth I fared. A new plant, with new leaves, in a new time. The stars were there, and I was set to climb. Book 3. Heaven. Canto 1. He moves all things. His glory penetrates the universe, and here it shines the more and there the less, and of these various states the one where I was gets more light. I saw, there in the Empyrean, things which he who comes back down from it has not the strength or knowledge to record. For memory can't follow intellect through the same length of journey, as it goes deep to come near what it desires. But all I could retain as treasure in my mind will now appear in this song. What's imprinted in my brain of the holy kingdom will be written here, Apollo, with your help. For this last burst of my long labor, make of me the flask of your power, which you always from the first required, from all who took on such a task before you granted the loved laurel. One peak of Parnassus has sufficed thus far. The muses my sole help to get things done. But now I need you, too, for now we are on the threshold of the last arena. Come into my breast, and breathe there, as when you flayed Marcius the fool when he was dumb enough to challenge you. If I could do enough for me so I might, power divine, show forth the shadow of the paradise I have in mind, you'll see me walk the line to your elected tree. Take the device of leaves, my theme, and you have helped me earn and put it on. So seldom has that crown been made for Caesar's or a poet's turn at triumph. When the bow with the renown of Daphne surely gives Apollo joy when anybody wants it. A great flame follows a little spark. Prayers may employ, after my time, great words, because that same peak of Apollo, Cirra, meets the plea of poets' wishes. The spring equinox is just one of the entrances we see the sun come in at, but this one unlocks a better course. Four circles join with three slant crosses, and the stars and tempers match to stamp the world's wax in the fruitful style of the world's lantern. It undid the latch and entered very near that point. So while the morning happened there and evening here, that hemisphere was white and this was dark, and Beatrice turned left and looked. For fear of blindness, never eagle risked that stark exposure of the eye to the full sun as she did then. And as the second ray, the one reflected, leaves the primary one at that point where they meet and climbs away, just as a turning pilgrim might have done, so from her action mine was made, infused from her eyes into mine by how I thought. And so unlike the way our eyes are used in mortal life, my glance, when it was caught, was held, fixed on the sun. Much is allowed in that place to our powers which here is not, by virtue of the fact that there, unbowed, man lived before he fell, and then forgot what once his senses knew. I had not gazed long at that light, yet had gazed long enough to see the cataract of sparks that blazed like iron that the fire makes boiling stuff, when suddenly it seemed the day was joined by day, as if he who could will it so had gestured, and a second sun was coined to deck the sky. While upward from below the eyes of Beatrice were fixed solely on the eternal wheels, I had raised mine to her, now that from my high object they were gone, and at her aspect things weren't what they were within me, as when Glaucus ate the herb that had revived the fish, and he assumed a sea-god's form. To pass beyond the curb of mere humanity is a step doomed not to be put in words. Let it suffice that the example should be put to him graced with that history. Not in a trice was man first formed. Dust made his every limb, but it was breath that made the living soul. Love, it was your breath. Were I just that part of me that you made last and not the whole, love, heaven ruling, you would know. Your heart of light raised me. Now your eternal wheel, constructed and set spinning by desire, held me intent by what it made me feel. It's harmony. Your voices form a choir in tune and spread among the spheres. The new great sound and the great light soon kindled such keenness of longing as I never knew before to seek the cause. To reach and touch and calm the turmoil in my mind. She, who saw me as I did, spoke before I could start asking. Your false fancies make you dense. Thus blinded, you cannot see as you would without them. You are not on earth. Your sense misleads you. Lightning, flying from its sphere between the earth and moon, can't run as fast as you regain your place, for you are near to heaven, which is your true land at last. With these brief words she smiled at me. My doubt might well have been dispelled, but soon I was in yet another question swathed about and said, I was content just then, because freed from a wonder. But I wonder now that I, a solid body, may ascend through realms of fire and thin air. Tell me how. She sighed with pity, as if moved to bend her eyes on me, just as a mother turns to her delirious child a look that rues the fate of all mankind, which never learns, and said, All things that are, contain and use order among themselves. The universe, therefore, in structure, is to God alike, and in this primal part it must disperse, while higher creatures watch it sort and strike, that stamp of excellence which never dies, the very end for which the system's made. And in this order, all things exercise their nature to express their place and grade nearer the sun or else, contrarywise, far off from it. They move to different ports, across the sea of being, each with its own instinct. Entities of different sorts are all born on, and one of them transmits fire to the moon, pale fire for mortal things. And this one binds and unifies the earth, not just for creatures with fur, scales, or wings, and no brain the bough shoots, but those whose birth blessed them with force and intellect. The light of providence that regulates all this soothes with its glow the first step to the height inside which the quick-spinning emphasis of the first impulse reaches its great speed. And that way now appointed to that place were sent by the bowstring, as if its need is to attain the mark of joy and grace. It's true that often, as a shape does not accord with art's intention, for a lack of workability in what it's got for substance, so sometimes the track of creatures fit to follow a good course can find their upward impulse turned aside, as we might see a fire endowed with force to climb, fall from the clouds a shot gone wide, and back to earth. False pleasure takes the blame. If I am right, I vow that your ascent unfailingly to heaven has the same reason within it for astonishment as when the average mountain spills a stream falling from head to foot. You'd have more cause for wonder if, without a moat or beam of hindrance, you had stayed below, all laws defied, as if a living flame might seem to stay still. You could truly marvel then. She turned her face up to the sky again. Canto 2. You sailors in your little boats that trail my singing ship because so keen to hear, by now it might be time for you to sail back till you see your shoreline reappear. For here the sea is deep, and if you lose my leading light just once, then steering clear might bring bewilderment. So you must choose. Be warned, this sea was never sailed before. Minerva breathes, Apollo steers, the nine muses will navigate me by the store of stars. You few that took this course of mine in early times to reach for angels' bread, by which men live but can't be satisfied down here, you might indeed have forged ahead in your craft as the salt depths moved aside, plowing the furrow till the waves again healed smooth. The glory-hungry Argonauts, who crossed to Colchis, were not so stunned when they saw their Jason yoke the bulls. Your thoughts will make theirs seem unruffled. The innate and everlasting thirst bore us away, the thirst for heaven in God's form. In spate we sped, almost as fast as one might say the star wheel turned, while Beatrice gazed on high, and I on her, and in the time a bolt that strikes a target takes to load and fly, I now saw I had hurtled to a halt, when something marvelous drew my eyes from her to it. From her my thoughts could not be hid. She turned the fairest eyes that ever were to me, and said this, glad at what she did. To God who brings us here to the first star, the moon, direct your thanks. It seemed to me a cloud now covered us, if clouds there are that can be dense yet still shine, solidly consistent, smooth like star-struck diamonds. And this eternal pearl now took us in, as water will retain its seamless bonds pierced by a ray of light. How to begin? If I were a body, and down here we can't believe a body might be drawn into a body, or we would be what we aren't. This should accentuate our wish anew of climbing up to see that essence where our nature joins to God. There will be seen all that we hold by faith. It will be there, not demonstrated. But for what we mean by knowing, known, known in itself, which is the primal truth that men believe. And I, my lady, how the credit is all his, that from the mortal world I reach the sky, I say from my devoted, thankful heart. But tell me why this body should be scarred by dark marks, which from earth are seen as part of Cain's crown, made from thorns long, sharp, and hard. She smiled a while, then said, If judgment errs in mortals, when the key of sense won't fit the lock, be not amazed if it occurs from now on that your reason's winged remit falls short of what the senses apprehend. Just keep the shafts of wonder out of it. Let them fly past. There's nothing to defend. All you need to do is tell me what you think. And I, presumably that which might seem up here to be divine means sun rays sink into the rare, but from the dense they gleam reflected. She, assuredly you'll find that your belief is deep in error drowned. If only you admit into your mind the following objections which are sound. The eighth sphere shows us many different lights. The fixed stars, which, if they are judged by size or quality, appear as different sights. If all those, like the moon, should harmonize their luminosity from dense or sparse collections of material, then each would have one virtue, in a single class distributed, as qualities might reach from more or less through equal on the scale. But that's absurd, for different virtues form from principles, and your thought would entail that only one of them provides the norm. Again, if rarity should be the source of that obscurity you ask about, the moon would either have in parts a course of emptiness right through it, or without much difference from the way that lean and fat are portioned in a body, it would stack the pages in its volume lying flat one on the other, thin white and thick black. But in the first case, at the sun's eclipse, we'd see the light shine through the moon, as through rare stuff. The second case lives on the lips for a little longer, since in this way, too, your view is false. If rarity falls short of going right through, there must be a mark where density ensures the ray is caught and thrown back, giving light instead of dark, just as a color is sent back through glass with hidden lead behind. You might contend those rays show dimmer when they have to pass up from the depths than those which must descend less deeply to encounter a hard place. Experiment, however, will remove such an objection, and from your false case release you. For experiment must prove always to be the spring that feeds the streams of your art. Take three mirrors. First you set two the same distance from you, so it seems a window lies between them where is met the third one by your eyes from where it stands yet further off. Then have, behind your back, a lamp set up by which those two demands for light are satisfied. See how the track rebounds of each beam. Though the one that comes the furthest may look smaller, you will see it shines with equal brightness. What benumbs your mind, now finally of error free, is that the truth has not yet taken hold. Think of the snow, when smitten with warm rays, bare of its former color and its cold. I want to fill your bare mind with a blaze of living light that sparkles in your eyes. Within the heaven of divine peace spins the primum mobile, whose virtue ties together all the being that begins and ends with it. The next heaven, hung with many lights and called the starry sphere, assigns that being severally among different existences, so they appear many and various, but are contained within its single virtue. Seven more heavens exist, and all of them ordained to deal out separate qualities they share within, to suit their ends and good effect. These organs and the universe proceed, as you see, grade by grade, in due respect, receiving from above all that they need to operate below. Observe well how I pass thus to the truth you seek, just so you may know how to ford the river now alone. I give you grounds for where to go. Now then, your final step. The holy wheels. Their motion and their virtues must derive, as from the leaping sparks and ringing peals of constant hammering the smiths contrive their iron work, from blessed movers. These are the angelic orders, and the realm made fair by all those flaring entities is shaped by the profound mind at the helm, and of that stamp becomes itself the seal. And as the soul in your dust is diffused through different body parts, each built to deal with different faculties diversely used, so the intelligence unfolds its hoard throughout the star field to be multiplied, which wheeling always in its one accord, from different virtues forms divine alloy with any precious body it makes quick, and with which, as in you, it will enjoy deep bonds, designed to strengthen as they stick. So by the joyous nature when it springs, the mingled virtue shines through like the flash in our eyes when we think of joyful things, and therefore the whole range of flame to ash, dividing light from light, comes otherwise from how you thought. Not how dense or how rare, but how glad are the angels, gives our eyes, our vision of the dark and bright up there. Proof that such excellence rules everywhere. Canto 3. The sun which first had warmed my breast with love, by proof and refutation had shown me the truth's fair face, and I raised, not above the level needed if I wished to free my mouth for speech, my head, just to confess myself corrected and assured. But then a sight appeared that left me powerless, glued to it, so I couldn't think again of what I had confessed. The words had fled. It was as if through smooth, transparent glass, or else through clear, still water whose creek bed is not so deep our faces fail to pass back up to us, so faintly that a pearl set on a pallid brow is not more slow to reach us from the image of a girl, that I saw many faces, poised as though eager to speak. I then made a mistake, like that which joined the man in spring, and lit tinder between them that brought love awake. Except my error was the opposite. Narcissus was more credulous than me. I saw the faces, and I took them for reflections. So I turned my eyes to see where they might really stand, and what I saw was nothing. So once more it came to be that I looked straight into the brilliant light of my sweet guide, her holy eyes aglow with her smile. She said, "Do not doubt it right that I smile at your childishness. For so reluctant is it still to set its foot on truth that it feels bound to turn you back to emptiness. But these are real, all put in this place for a failure, for their lack of loyalty to vows. So speak with them, hear and believe. A true light gives them peace, but simply by that function must condemn the peaceful ones to keep turned without cease their steps towards it." I approached the shade that most seemed keen to talk, and I said this, almost consumed by my will. "Spirit made to know, in this eternal life of bliss, the sweetness of its beams, a taste which must be tasted first before it is conceived. It would be kind of you if you could just render my curiosity relieved by telling me your name and of your fate." And she, with smiling eyes of eagerness, "Our charity shuts no doors, bars no gate. Against right will, for our will can't be less than his, who wills his whole court to be as himself. A virgin sister when I breathed I was, and you will find your memory has a picture which, although now I am wreathed with greater fairness, you will see is mine. Piccarda Donati. I am put here with all these other blessed ones, and in line with their lot I too tarry in the sphere of smallest orbit, and therefore least fast, the slow sky of the moon. Our sentiments, which nothing sets ablaze save first and last, to please the Holy Ghost, find joy intense in our conformity to his regime. And this position which I occupy, as low down on the scale as it might seem, is given us for failing to comply sufficiently in duty to our vows." And then I said to her, "Your wondrous face that I see now, diversity endows with inner light of an amazing grace, divine beyond my knowledge, changing you from what you were. But now there's what you say to help me recollect what I once knew. Yet tell me, happy as you are to stay in this sphere, do you not desire a post up higher, where you can see more and feel more loved yet?" With the others in that host, she smiled at this, and answered with such real gladness she seemed to burn in love's first fire. "Brother, our charity is calmed by will, willing just what we have, with no desire for more. If we wish to be higher still, then our desire would fail to jibe with his will that appoints us here. Such, you will find, cannot hold in these circles. If it is necessity, clear to the thinking mind to be in charity, and if you well study its nature. No, indeed, the gist itself of this blessed state is, we compel ourselves at all times wholly to exist within the will divine, so that our wills are thus themselves made one. Therefore our rank, from height to height throughout the realm, instills pleasure in all of it, and so we thank the King who wills us to his will. For in his will is our peace. His will is the sea towards which all things move just to begin, the souls it makes in all the progeny of nature. For it is creative twice, in both these ways." She made it clear to me that heaven everywhere is paradise, although the great good's favor does not reign in one mode. As when one food might suffice, yet craving for another may remain, we thank our stars, and yet we are bereft. As when that happens, so did I, with speech and gesture, strive to hear the weft and warp, the shuttle driven through to reach its goal, of what the vow was she had left neglected. "Perfect life and its reward," she said. "Place in high heaven, great Saint Clare, whose rule in your world binds with one accord those novices in robe and veil who swear that until death they'll always wake and sleep with that bridegroom who sanctions any vow made out of charity and aim to keep him pleased." To follow her was why and how I fled, a young girl from the world, and wrapped her habit round me, dedicating all my life to her chaste way. But I was trapped. Men used to evil got in through the wall of good, and from the cloister I was torn, and what my life was afterwards, God knows. But see this other splendor here, like dawn appearing to you on my right, who glows with all the light of our sphere. She, too, was a sister, and the same way lost her veil in safety, but she never, just because she'd seen the world triumph and custom fail, abjured the inward veil that soothed her heart. This is the light of that great Constance, she who bore, when brought back from her life apart, the third and last child with the pedigree of emperor. And the sire was that false start, the second Swabian quick breeze to blow. She spoke thus, then began to sing the hymn Ave Maria, and still singing so, went down like something heavy growing dim into the depths. My sight went after her, as far as it could plunge. Then it returned, when it had lost her, back where my eyes were faced with the greater mark. And there she burned. All I could see was Beatrice, nor could move my gaze away, although it hurt my eyes so much at first I feared that it might prove too hard to go on looking or devise questions whose shyness she would not despise. Canto 4. Between two tempting dishes, each way set apart and parallel in their appeal, a man could, before either of them met his lips, perish from hunger, his next meal untouched. A lamb between two wolves might stand in equal fear of both and what they crave. A hound between doves, on the other hand, more like the man, could die, however brave, torn by irresolution. Thus, if I kept silent, by two equal doubts compelled, I neither blame nor praise myself thereby. It was necessity. My tongue was held, but my desire was painted on my face. My question, too, and far more warmly than in plain words. Beatrice took Daniel's place when he guessed the bad dream and shrunk the span of Nebuchadnezzar's wrath, which made that king cruelly unjust, and she said, I see well how one desire leads to another thing, drawing you on so that without a spell for breath, your keenness binds itself and you. You reason thus, if my right will prevails, how is it something someone else might do by violence can impede it so it fails even a little, the preferment due to me by merit? And you are perplexed that souls seem to return, as Plato thought, into the stars. These questions, mixed and vexed, press on your will. First I shall treat the thought containing the most poison, which is that stemming from Plato, who wants different skies for each grade of beatitude, and at the threshold must be those who might not rise to be exalted. Let that thought be gone. Not even the first seraph at God's side, not Moses, Samuel, or whichever John you choose, and no, not even heaven's pride, Mary herself, are in a different seat than this first circle where these souls appear. All heaven is this place. For all you'll meet, eternity is the same length, to the year. They all make heaven fair, and life is sweet for each. But since the far is always near, the difference of their bliss is measured by only their distance from the breath divine and everlasting in a single sky. These ones have shown themselves, not by design of sphere allotted to them, but to prove that they are the least exalted, last in line to go up nearer. Seeming still, they move. Here I must speak directly to your sense. For only how you see and feel can seize that which your intellect finds too immense at first encounter. It's by such degrees of teaching that the scriptures condescend to your capacity. Thus the supreme being is given hands and feet. The end is allegory. And a hidden theme is also served when Holy Church brings news of Michael decked out with a human face, and Gabriel and Raphael. The views put by Timaeus pinning down the place of souls are not reflected here, for what he says he seems to think true, that the soul returns to its own star, from which it got, when nature formed it as a separate whole, released. Perhaps, however, that was not the true import of what his words express, and there's a meaning we might not despise. His arrow flies with some truth, more or less, if he means that their influence, in guise of honor or of blame, rejoins these wheels. This principle, ill understood, misled almost the whole world, which in part still feels falsely. The names of stars meant what they said in the first instance. Mars and Mercury, and Jupiter as gods to be revered. The other doubt that shakes your reverie is not so poisonous. You won't be steered away from me and into heresy by mischief of that kind. Our justice may appear unjust to mortals. That just proves how faith, not wicked doubt, has final say in the more mystifying ways God moves. But since your understanding is well fit to penetrate that truth, I shall content your need to know about the violence. It may well be that there's no thought of consent by the victim to the violator. Yet these souls were not excused on that account. For will, if it wills not, is still not set aside completely, but like fire will mount straight up again along 1,000 times blown reeling sideways, and it therefore bends as much or little in the face of crimes as it condones them. So it all depends on what these did next. And they might have fled back to the holy places if their will had been unbroken. Stretched on his hot bed, Lawrence remained determined to fulfill his destiny. And unmoved, the right hand of Mucius stayed in the fire. The same determination, you must understand, would surely have brought these back whence they came as soon as they were free. The path they'd been abducted from was there still. Still such force of will is rare. But if the things I mean form part, from now on, of your mind's resource, then your false reasoning is cancelled out to trouble you no more, as it well might have done. But now, to turn your course about, if you were by yourself, another tight and hard, exhausting place lies close ahead. It's near enough to be plain to your sight. It's set now in your mind what I have said. There can be no lies from a soul in bliss, for it is near to primal truth always. Picarde might have seemed to counter this when she said Constance, with her constant gaze forever on the veil, did not return to where she might have worn it once again. But, brother, many times, as you should learn, it happens that, against the will of men, escape from danger means that something's done which shouldn't be. So Alcmaeon achieved revenge on her, although he was her son, who killed his father. He was twice bereaved, but pitiless in piety at last. Learn this, then, at this point. There is a blend of force and will, where no offense is passed beyond excuse, though means lead to good end. The absolute will knows no yielding law, but when conditional, will may give ground, because it fears, if it resists, that more trouble will come. Picarda, then, was sound. She meant strict will by what she said before, and I the other kind. Thus you have found the truth two ways. Such was the rippling flow, setting one wish and then the next at rest, of the holy stream that holds all we can know of truth, and from the fountain forth is blessed. Beloved of the first love, you that so divinely speak, I said, you flood my soul to make it always warm and more alive. Not all of my affection, not the whole of what I say, no matter how I strive, will serve to match your grace to me with mine. May he do that who sees and can do all. I see well how, unless the truth divine enlightens it, our intellect must fall short of the truth unsatisfied. That line, once crossed beyond which human truth can range to holy truth, the beast is in its lair. Home gained, it rests, impervious to change, and all of our desires were empty air without this. It means doubt is like a shoot springing from truth. It is a natural urge. The questioning, as nature at the root, we're pushed from height to height till we emerge up at the summit, It's all nature's plan. And so I am invited and made bold to ask you of another truth less than clear to me, lady. Let me now be told, if ever it can happen that a man may make it up to you by doing good for vows he has not kept. She looked at me. With eyes so full of love, my powers could do nothing to withstand the clarity that sparkled there within. My vision shook. I almost fainted, stunned by that one look. Canto 5. If in a flame of love beyond all seen on earth, I glow to you so that your eyes are conquered in their power, let that not mean you marvel, for you have to realize this comes when perfect vision apprehends the good, and knowing what it is, moves near. I see now how the light that never ends shines in your mind, light which seemed to appear alone and always kindles love. From this come all things that beguile you, even though from just a trace of it, and hit and miss your understanding of it, yet the glow shines through. So saying, Beatrice began the canto, and like one who would not break her speech, she said, God's greatest gift to man in all the bounty he was moved to make throughout creation, the one gift the most close to his goodness, and the one he calls most precious, is free will. Creatures that boast intelligence have this, but none that falls outside that category is endowed with any. Now it will be clear to you, in view of this, the worth of what is vowed. If it be such that God does as you do, that is, consent. For it is in the pact of God and man that the great treasure chest, free will, as I have said, by its own act becomes the sacrifice. What would be best to offer for a vow that's unfulfilled? Nothing. Nothing you give in recompense will serve, for what you will is now ill-willed. Good works with stolen gains would make more sense. By now you are assured of the chief point. But Holy Church can sometimes waive its laws in this regard, which might seem out of joint with what I've said is true. So you must pause for thought, sit at the table for a while. The tough food you have swallowed won't stay down without help. Let your mind, in its best style, be open to my words and win renown for holding on to them, since to have heard without retention can't deserve the name of knowledge. The mere thought would be absurd. Two things in close accord but not the same supply the essence of that sacrifice. One is material, the thing you give or else give up. That's the substantial price. The other's formal, how you vow to live, the pact itself. This last can't be annulled save by observing it, regarding which I spoke just now with never a point dulled. Just as the Hebrews had, without a hitch, to make their offerings, though what those were could change, as you are no doubt well aware, the formal part to which I now refer, I made clear when I told the tale back there about the vow. That part, indeed, may be such that no fault, if matter is exchanged, need be incurred. But still, let no one free his shoulders from a burden once arranged, unless, to back his choice, the silver key of priestly wisdom and the golden one that signifies priestly authority have both been turned to prove it may be done. And every such exchange is reckoned vain, unless the new load outweighs the one shed by 6 to 4 at least, so that a gain of burden, not a loss, is there instead. A vow, which tips all balances on earth, for value can't be matched by anything at all, no matter what that thing is worth. Therefore let humans take great care to bring their full attention to a vow, and not be frivolous. Nor should they be perverse like Jephthah, who pledged wildly and forgot that keeping faith might make a bad thing worse. He said that he would offer to be burned, the first thing that emerged from his front door. It was his daughter. And too late he learned that saying, I did ill, would have earned more credit with God. And Agamemnon, too, showed the same folly when to sail for Troy on a fair wind he offered payment down, his daughter Iphigenia. The joy went out of her fair face. To grieve for her is wise for all who've heard about that rite, and simple. How could such a thing occur? Christians, let not your attitude be light to undertakings. Feathers in every wind ought not to be your model, nor will all waters restore clean skin when you have sinned. Remember how, to save you from a fall, you have the testaments, both new and old, to guide you and the pastor of the church. Give not the Jew that's with you in the fold his opportunity. If you besmirch yourself with wicked greed at his cheap rates, the partner is glad. You must be men, not stupid sheep. For ridicule awaits the lamb that leaves its mother's milk, and then, foolish and wanton, fights itself to suit its brainless pleasure. Just so Beatrice spoke, in these words that I write, and then turned, mute, yet more with longing than I can evoke, to where the universe is brightest. Such a falling wordless, and a change of look, silenced my eager mind, already much preoccupied with pages, a whole book of extra questions. We sped like a shaft that strikes the mark before the cord is still, into the second realm. As if she laughed aloud, I saw my lady's fair face fill with joy when entering the radiance of that next heaven, and the planet turn the brighter for it, and the star enhance its aspect with a smile, though it could burn more brightly only in this circumstance. Imagine then what I became, when by my nature I am so transmutable. As in a fish pool that's a calm, clear sky to all those fish beneath, they form a school around what comes from outside, which they guess to be new food. So now I saw, at least, a thousand splendors make the distance less towards us, gathering around the feast. From them I heard, "How this one will augment our lives!" And as each eager soul came near, it seemed so full of happiness, it sent bright flames out all around. If I stopped here, think, reader, how you'd crave a testament more full. Then you will know how much desire I had to hear from them about their state as soon as I could see them in their fire. You, born for good, for whom it is the fate, given by grace to gaze on the great chairs of triumph in eternity, although your war continues, each one of us bears the light of charity that spreads its glow through all heaven. Thus, if you're inclined to be enlightened about us, then at your pleasure ask away, just speak your mind. One of those pious spirits said all that. Then Beatrice said this, "Speak, speak. You'll find them trustworthy as gods." I see well how you nest in your own light, which is drawn from your eyes. For when you speak, I can tell it must spring from your smile, an extra dawn adorning daylight. As for what you are, however, I don't know, nor why you rank in this sphere that another's beams debar from mortal sight, for Mercury is blank beside the blazing sun. Thus I inquired of that effulgence which addressed me first, a light that then became, as if inspired, far brighter than before. Like the sunburst that comes when all dense vapors burned away, the sun conceals itself with excess light, just so the holy form put on more day, as if the day it had was merely night, and hid in its own joy. What can I say? Such eloquence can spring from hidden things. But what it said next, my next canto sings. Canto 6. When Constantine, 2 centuries before my time, removed the eagle from the west and sent it east, then never any more for all those years did its first place of rest rule all the world. The bird of God defied the wind that brought Aeneas first to Rome through marriage with Lavinia. Flung wide to Europe's edge, it reigned in its new home, Byzantium, 200 years at least, close to the mountains where it first took flight to travel with Aeneas from the east into the west. And there, in all its might, Under the shadow of its sacred wings, it held the world and passed from hand to hand that held it, till the one in charge of things was I, Justinian. In that far land I reigned as Caesar. By the first love's will, which I could feel within, I trimmed the laws of all their folderol and overkill. Before I set my effort to that cause, I still believed the heresy that Christ had just one nature, which was all divine and never human. That idea of Christ I was content with, and I called it mine, until Pope Agapetus spoke to me, describing the true faith, which I believed, as you yourself can see transparently, that any contradiction is achieved only between the true and the untrue. As soon as I walked with the Church, it pleased God in His grace to spur me to the new high task, and by it I was wholly seized. And my dear Belisarius obeyed my orders to take arms, and he was blessed by God's right hand, and so much ground was made in our name that I took the sign to rest from battle and devote myself to peace. Here ends, then, the brief answer to your first question. And yet its tenor begs increase to my response, so you, so long immersed in faction fights to counter or to claim the holy standard, may see why they act that way. How courage brought the banner fame and reverence, all of which began, in fact, when Pallas, fighting for Aeneas, gave his life to found the city where it flew and flies again, designed by God to wave above the Church, if not the empire. You well know the eagle stayed 300 years in Alba, till at last a fight took place for its soul's sake, when 3 from there crossed spears with 3 from Rome. Both teams matched face to face, had Trojan blood, but only one could win. The one from Rome. Then under 7 kings the city saw its outward reach begin. You know that, too, and know of all the things the eagle did. The rape of the Sabines, Lucretia's suicide, the neighbors cowed in all the realms, oneness it meant and means, the banner borne against the Gauls, allowed by Brennus to get close, and borne against Pyrrhus and other princes and communes, a list that lasts forever once commenced. All those proud Arabs brought from the sand dunes of Africa to cross the Alpine peaks by Hannibal, the crags you fall from, Paul, the eagle brought them down, as history speaks. Under that flag such youths as Scipio and Pompey had their triumphs. To that hill Fiesole, where you were born, it proved bitter. Then, near the time when heaven's will decreed that all the world at once be moved to match its state of peace, the holy sign